Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American Vince Kelly is an actor, singer, dancer, writer who has been in the industry for over 30 years. Vince is currently playing Blanche on the stage production of Golden Girls, The Love Continues. Picture it, United States, 2025. Golden Girls, The Love Continues brings the sassiest seniors to stages around the country for one more hurrah. We find Sophia out on bail after being busted by the DEA for running a drug ring for retirees. Blanche and Rose have founded Creakin, a thriving sex app for seniors, and Dorothy's trying to hold it all together with help from a new, much younger sex-crazed lover. Golden Girls, The Laughs Continue allow audiences to relive the heartfelt hilarity of the four ladies who never stop being best friends. The play is written by Robert Lillow and is directed by Eric Swanson. The cast includes Ryan Bernier as Dorothy, Vince Kelly as Blanche, Adam Graeber as Rose, Christopher Cam as Sophia, and Tommy Favorite as Stanley and Bert. The production is produced by Murray and Peter Present and Outback Presents. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing his journey in the entertainment world, and portraying Blanche in the production of Golden Girls, The Laughs Continue, is Vince Kelly. Where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful and currently I am at my home in Detroit, Michigan.
Let's take you way back to the beginning. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, do you think, okay, I want to be in this creative world? And how did that journey progress?
I was 7 years old and my uncle's girlfriend at the time, who is now my aunt, she would do the shows in high school, and they were doing The Sound of Music, and obviously they needed a few kids for that. So she asked my mom if I could go and audition, and my mom was like, get him out of the house. Sounds good to me. So I went, and I instantly knew. I mean, 7 years old, I was like, maybe I didn't know until there was an audience, but I knew once I saw like everyone looking at me and how if I said something, people could laugh or say, ah, or like get a reaction out of people. I was like, let's do this. So then I just kept doing kind of the shows there at the high school because they were open to the community. And then I think it was maybe third grade. I had a wonderful teacher who could tell that I wanted to be more serious about it. And she talked to my mom and was like, we got to get him in dance classes and voice lessons and, you know, let's really give it a go. And I kept doing it all throughout college. I went to school for performing arts in New York. And then after that, I just kind of been working as an actor.
What classes and what is studied at the University or College of Performing Arts?
Yeah, so I went to this school called AMDA, which is a conservatory. So you don't even take like general education. I haven't taken a math class since I was in 11th grade in high school, and it shows I'm very bad at math, but it's a very rigorous performing arts. So, you know, you're taking tap, jazz, ballet, movement, you're learning about makeup, costuming, acting for musical theater, history of theater and stuff like that. It's a very, very intense, you know, like a program. And they kind of really just prepare you for the real world of being a working professional. You know, they teach you how to audition and all that stuff. So that was that. It was really fun to just really hunker down and like focus on what I loved most, which was doing theater and not have to worry about taxes.
I remember in the series Glee, a few of the characters.
It's the school that Glee is based off of. The school I went to was called AMDA, and the one that they called was called like NAMDA or something like that. So it is the school that it is based off of that like Rachel and Kurt went to. Yeah.
Is it as intense as they portrayed on the show, or did they just add a little bit of drama?
It's drama kids, so it's going to be a little dramatic. But yeah, I mean, I remember like I had tap class at like 8 a.m. on Friday mornings. And I was like, this is insane. This is insane. So yeah, it is, you know, everyone's very passionate and your teachers are all Broadway performers. So they also bring their own theatricality to it and stuff like that. You know, they were on Broadway in the 70s, 80s, 90s currently. So it was really fun to get to experience like incredibly firsthand what the industry was like. And you're in New York, which was just so much fun. I mean, I moved there when I was 17, which was crazy. Probably not wise, but we had a good time. I'm still here to tell the tale. So I guess it worked out fine.
Yes, they prepared you for the industry, as you referenced. Was it an exact transfer of that into going into the industry? Or were there any aspects once you became professional, inverted commas, that surprised you were actually, oh, this is also part of it?
No, I think that's what's cool about that particular school. You know, I have a lot of my friends and you know, when colleagues and stuff all went to different schools. And, you know, everyone's going to have their own approach. But ANDA really... they really just teach you how to audition and what the industry is like. And I think that I forever am grateful for that. You know, there's other things that the school probably could do differently and better. And that's not for this podcast or this conversation. They really did say, like, I remember like on the first day of class, they said, you know, like, look to your left and look to your right. That person might never do performing arts after this, but they might be the prop master, or they might be a producer, or they might be the lighting guy. And that is something that I've learned so much in this industry that, you know, everybody at some level thinks like they want to be on stage, but it's just not enough roles for everybody. So you have to find ways to pay the bills and to stay in the industry if that's what you choose to do. And that was super eye-opening to me. And I've never heard anybody else say that, you know, other schools, U of M, they're like, you're all going to be on Broadway. And I guess the University of Michigan, they are all on Broadway. So they have that going for them. But it was really fun to just see there's so much more to the industry than just getting the one job that they have. You know, there's 25 people backstage. And it gave me like a very certain level of respect of how all those people operate as well.
Yes, there are those ones who want to be on stage and then get the backstage or those behind the scenes roles in order to pay the bills. But also, I suppose in the school, it allows those people to realize, oh, maybe being on the stage is not my passion. And maybe being the light in your eyes and the director is my passion.
100%. Yeah. Gives you like a really well-rounded version of what the industry really is.
Do you do in front of camera acting and on stage or only on stage?
Just really on stage. I guess I've never had the opportunity, but I've never had that drive. When I was in New York, you know, like at school and stuff like that, we would sometimes sign up to be like extras in movies, which is really just standing around and waiting in a cool costume. Hurry up and wait is just not for me. In acting, you have your tech rehearsals, you know, where they are focusing the lighting, and it really just, you're just a warm body and you have to stand. And then they say, okay, now move over 2 feet to the left. And that is miserable for me. And I think that that's pretty much what like television and film is. So it just doesn't seem like it's for me. I love instant gratification. I want the audience to tell me in the moment if it's good or not. I've just never gone down that road. If anybody would like to make an offer, I'm open to it. But it's not something that I've ever pursued.
What do you love about performing in theater?
I love the live audience. I love the unexpected things. You know, live theater is live theater, and for better or worse, it's very cliche, but they say what happens on that night will never be captured again. It is like super magical. That's what makes live theater, you know, endearing and enduring. And that is my favorite parts. I love changing it up a little night. I love finding new things because of the repetitivity that we get to do this and stuff like that. I just love an audience. I love eliciting a reaction. And it's super fun doing a tour because every audience is different, obviously, instinctively. But if you're in New York, you kind of know what you're getting. There's tourists and, you know, middle America and all this stuff. But when we're on the tour, you know, one day we're in Fresno, California, and the next day we're in Georgia. And those are very different audiences. So it's super fun reading them and seeing what kind of show they're here for tonight and then giving it to them or doing our best to give it to them.
Often I've heard stage actors say that when something goes wrong, in inverted commas, obviously, you guys performing on the stage knows that something's gone wrong, but I'm sure 90 to 95% of the audience more than likely do not know that something's gone wrong.
100%.
Obviously, it's that whole thing of keep going and keep going, moving in the show to allow it to be that what it is. How do you personally not allow those situations where something has gone wrong affect you over a period of time that it affects your other performances after that?
Yeah. If we are talking about a different show, I would have a very different answer. If we were doing Waiting for Godot or, you know, Chekhov or something like that, I'd say, you know, you compartmentalize and you say that you're going to be able to deal with that later. You stay in the moment and like you just push through and you make sure that everyone's safe and that everything's okay. And you can look at your actors and say so much without having to say words, blah, 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 blah. What we're talking about is Golden Girls, The Last Continue, in which case it's a much different show. I've had my microphone cut out in the middle of the show and I'll say to the audience, I'll say, hold on a second. And I'll ask the stage manager, come on, and I'll lift my shirt up and I'll be like, can you fix this? These people pay good money for me to hear what I'm saying. And we just have such a good time. You know, like if I've heard crashes backstage and I'm like, what was that? And like the audience is like, is this supposed to happen? So that's a very fortunate and fun part of this particular show and the lengthy creative freedom that the producers have given us. But we make a meal out of things going wrong. A pan falls off the wall or something like that. We're going to do like a 5-minute joke about how there was an earthquake or a hurricane in Florida. And we just like improv and we like make it up as we go along. And it's some of my favorite moments that's like ever happened.
So you play Blanche on the Golden Girls production. How long have you been in the role?
Just over 3 years now.
Were you part of the original cast or are you part of the original cast?
Yes. Yeah. I, again, was very fortunate to have worked with this production company before, before the pandemic. We were doing another show. And then during lockdown and, you know, that whole process, we were trying to think of what was next, which might have just been wishful thinking and hoping and praying that there was going to be something next. So like we had something to look forward to. And then when we came out of the lockdown, we realized that like it was going to be real. So I've been privileged enough to be a part of the production like since its inception. And Blanche was always the part that I wanted to play and was always like my dream to be able to do that. So I've really gotten to like create her character from not the ground up. I was given great material from Rue McClanahan and the writers of the original series. I like to think that it was like a passing of the torch or something like that. But yeah, I've been the only Blanche, which has been so much fun.
Obviously, we know the legacy of the show, which has brought inspiration to create this show that you guys are doing. What other elements were the spark for the creators and the producers to say, ah, we want to do this now?
The Golden Girls are like currently more popular when they were incredibly popular and like on the air in the late 80s and early 90s. So, you know, I mean, I don't want to sound crass, but we knew that it had the potential to have an audience just because. And I mean, honestly, the lockdown had a lot to do with that. Hulu said that like it was watched for like 23 million hours during like the lockdown. People really became a part of it. And then once the world started opening back up again, you had Golden Girls Pop-Up Kitchens, which was like a restaurant experience surrounded by the Golden Girls. And all these new merchandise deals were coming out and Disney gave it to Hulu and it was everywhere and it was a different generation. The generation who watched it originally was showing it to the next generation and their daughters were a part of it and, you know, all the kids and stuff. So it just became evergreen and huge. So we wanted to be a part of that because we all do really love the show. It's not just like nobody just handed me a script and I was like, oh, I guess I'll research this. Golden Girls has been a part of my life since I can remember. We both debuted the same year, 1985, as the year we both were born. So when I was 6, 7, 8, it was on TV. It was very popular. My grandmother would watch it. I would watch it with her. And then it just kind of grew up with me. It went on Hallmark and then Hulu and streaming now and everywhere. So yeah, we knew that we wanted to be able to be a part of that, you know, third act renaissance of Golden Girls. And we wanted to have fun. Female impersonation is a big part of this production company. It's what we know very well. So that's kind of why we said, who are four larger than life characters that we can put our own special spin in, like what we do very well? And the Golden Girls just lended itself so well to that. They are such icons, both the characters and the actresses who portrayed them. So it just was a perfect, perfect marriage.
You referenced 1985. I was just watching the Emmys earlier and they did a
tribute last night.
Yeah, a tribute for the 40 years that it was on screen. So for you, what was the appeal to say, okay, I want to play Blanche? What about Rue's character was your thing? It was like, ah, yes. I relate to her.
Yes. I mean, I think in different parts of my life, I've related to her differently, but I distinctly remember when I was little and I watched the show with my grandmother. You know, I was like 7 years old. I didn't understand really any of the jokes or the innuendo. But as a, you know, 7 year old boy who knew, maybe I didn't know that I was gay, but I knew there was something going on there. And I saw this fabulous woman in her clothes and her jewelry and the way that she walked and carried herself and didn't take herself too seriously. I was like, there's something there. I don't know what it is yet. I'll figure it out eventually. But I had like an instant connection with her. And then maybe in my, you know, 20s, I enjoyed that type of attention. I'm now locked down. I've been with somebody for 14 years. So my Blanche time is past me, but I always had a kinship. I see myself as the center of attention. I see myself as this tragic character, you know, this Vivian Leigh in Gone with the Wind, or like Elizabeth Taylor, Tennessee Williams heroine, when I have a very lovely life and I make everything more dramatic than it needs to be. And that's very Blanche. And I also, the things that I try to learn from Blanche that I try to hold closer to me are like, she doesn't let anything bother her. You know, the girls are making, they make fun of each other all the time. That's part of their relationship. But, you know, when Sophia calls her a slut, she, you know, she owns it. And she's like, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. So that's something that I try to do more of, that you're just like water off a duck's back and everything is love. And the clothes. I love clothes. So that was a big part of it. Blanche has the best wardrobe. And I said, that's for me.
Because each of the characters in the program or in the show that represented their authentic selves, there was Rose, who's ditzy, but she owned it. Blanche being the
yes.
slut, and she owned it. Sophia, they all owned who they are. And in a yes. society these
authenticity,
days,
yeah.
In the society these days, which is where it's all about filters and Instagram and filtering out who you are, not so you can be someone else. How do you think the authenticity and the message of authenticity will resonate with people who are trying to filter themselves all the time?
Oh my God, that's great. I'm going to be stealing and borrowing that. Thank you so much for that tidbit. I think that's great. That's such a great question. I think that has to be some of the success of why the show is still super relevant, because it was for women who, if you really want to get down to it, we're supposed to be second thoughts in society. They're an older women, and that's supposed to be, you know, the first forgotten people. You know, like you're an older woman, we overlook you, you are just another face in the crowd. And these women so were authentic and owned who they were, and were like, no, we're still viable, we're still sexy, we're still able to work, we're still here. I think that that's like the first step of being authentic, is to know yourself first. And then I think, like, yeah, the way that you project that, the authenticity, can really teach people a lot in showing that you're still worth something, no matter what age you are, and no matter what sex you are, and maybe even no matter what your identity is, your sexual identity or whatever that is, that like you can own it, you can be authentic, and you'll still have friends, and you'll still have a family, and you'll still have your chosen family. And it was a great blueprint of how you can live your life.
I love what you say, because there's this ageism in society. When you, a person gets, whether it's male or female, you get to a certain age, it's like, okay, you're no longer a contributor. You may be seen as a wise person, but you're not really relevant. Like you said, you're facing the crowd. And it's still happening in the entertainment industry. I was reading an article of a couple of big UK radio stations, and they see if a female artist is over the age of 30, they no longer relevant and will no longer play their music. Gratefully, social media, exactly, your face says it all. Gratefully, social media has played a part to destroy that, because Kylie, as we know, she's 55, 56. Padum Padum came out.
Love it.
Kylie's my favorite as well. In the UK, they wouldn't play it because she's 55, no longer relevant. But then social media blew it up and they were forced to play it, because it's like, okay, it is being
seen. We have to do it. Yeah. I thought you were going to say like Celia Black or something, because like she had a big social media thing this last summer. But Kylie, oh my God, she's so relevant still. That's so crazy. That's when the show was like pitched to Susan Harris, the creator of the show. NBC said, we want a show about older women and like what that means. And Susan Harris was like, oh, okay, yes, let me see about this. So Susan Harris wrote a show for women in their 70s. NBC was like, they're like, we meant like 40s. And Susan Harris was like, that is not an older woman. That is like a woman in the prime of her life. What are you talking about? So they kind of met in the middle, and that's how we got the Golden Girls. So it's just so funny how even in 1985, which is probably still today, like a woman in their 40s was supposed to be the idea of somebody who was like, goodbye, we're going to put you on an iceberg and we'll say goodbye. Thank you so much. We had a great time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And this woman was like, oh, so women in their 70s? And they were like, no, what? So it's so funny to see how far we've come and also how far we have not come.
Tell us exactly about the show. What happens in the show? What is the story?
Yes. So the elevator pitch is Sophia is out on bail. She was arrested for selling some drugs, medicinal purposes, of course, only to some of her friends at the Shady Pines retirement home. She got in very big trouble. And Rose and Blanche had developed a dating site, really a hookup app for seniors, for people of a certain age to find, you know, companionship. And on that app, Dorothy meets a man who she has very passionate feelings for. But we find out that this man is Sophia's prosecuting attorney. He's the man who is trying to put Sophia in jail. So we have to figure out what to do in 2 hours or less. And that's kind of the show. Something that you definitely could have imagined would have happened on the original Golden Girls if it was still on today, which is kind of the whole gimmick of the show. It takes place in 2025. We are living today. It's as if we never went off the air. We're still having a good time. We moved from like NBC to maybe like HBO so that we can have some more colorful language that would have been shut down by standards and practices back then. But that's it. Same exact formula, same ingredients, just prepared in a new, fun way.
With shenanigans happening along the way. As you were telling me the story, I can just see the story happening in one of the episodes. So you referenced that you're going on tour and you're in different cities and that. To be on stage in a character for a period of time, whether you're on Broadway, off Broadway, or touring, it's a lot of energy. It's a lot of time being on the stage and being in that space. And a lot of people maybe go see one night or one show and think, oh, this is great. They don't realize the amount of energy expenditure, body, mind, and soul that it takes for a performer to be on the stage. For you personally, how do you balance yourself so that you're able to do long tours are on a specific tour?
It's about the foundation of having a great team. I am like never alone. None of us are, you know, alone in this process. I genuinely love my cast so much. We are so close on stage as we are off stage. So it never feels like work. It feels like every day is like a little party with my friends. And that is extended to the crew as well. And it is work. And some days are much harder than the others. And I would say, or the good days outnumber the bad days. So, you know, that's really great. And I've been in productions, long-term productions, where the monotony can start to get to you of doing the exact same thing every day. But what is built into our production is that it is different every night. The storyline is obviously the same, but we bring a lot of topical stuff. So like if something crazy to an extent happened in the world, we'll find a way to talk about it in the show. And we are constantly trying to make each other break up and, you know, outdo one another, which is like always a fun challenge. And we are completely given that freedom. We also love, you know, researching where we are. We want that night's audience to feel like that show was handcrafted just for them. So, you know, like when we go to a new city, we'll arrive and we talk to the stagehands and we talk to, you know, we'll look online, we'll look on, you know, the internet and say like, what's going on in these people's lives? What's happening in this part of the country? What's, you know, the silly issue that they're facing in, you know, Green Lake, Colorado today? And we'll find that out and we'll figure out a way to make it in the show. And the audience is like, wait, what? How do you know about the parking meter strike that happened last week? And like, we know. So it's really super fun and it gives us something kind of different to do every day. So it's never just like autopilot. It's like, oh, I know I'm supposed to do a joke about the quilt festival that's happening next week. And they just, the audience is like, how the hell do they know about the quilt festival? And I'm like, because we do our research.
You're going to be touring around the country through November. Is it going to be carrying on next year? You guys don't know yet.
We will be back in January, February. We have some stuff lined up there, which is wonderful. And then, yes, there is like some other things that are coming down the pipeline. You know, when you've been at it as long as we have, you do start to run out of cities. You run out of markets to where you can, you know, really turn up a profit, you know, which is at the end of the day, it is still a business. And we have to pay the bills and whatnot. And we've just been so fortunate to have seen so much of the country, so much of North America. We recently opened Canada last year as a market, which has been so wonderful. They are such lovely people. But, you know, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And I think that we're excited to see what other opportunities there are for all of us, is maybe what I am legally allowed to say.
So just putting it out there, maybe come through to South Africa and do a show here.
I'll start looking at the shipments, our cargo container shipment on to South Africa.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that the world is not always the most fun, happy place to be in on any given day. But what I can do my best to guarantee you is that if you come and see a 2-hour and 20-minute production of Golden Girls Alas Continue, you will have an amazing time. You will laugh. You will check your troubles at the door and sit with some people who are also here for a good time for as long as the show takes that night. And it is like a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful escape. And it is so exciting and so much fun. And I'm so proud that I get to do that. It's a great contribution, I feel.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.